Torah describes that then after Noach and his family exit the Teva, that Vayochel Noach Isha Adoma Vayitzak Barim. The question what the word Vayochel means is a matter of some dispute amongst the Mephoshim. So Rashi, for instance, says that Osa Atzva Chulin, he debased himself by engaging in something which was unbecoming. The Sfundal has a very remarkable comment, which you have in front of you here. Vayochel Noach, hischil befoal bilti na'os, v'lachein nimshachu mizeh ma'asim asher lo ye'osu. Ki ma'at min ha'ki omno, ma'at min ha'kilkul, v'haschova yesovev harbe mimenu basov. So the Sfundal says that Vayochel is miloshon l'haschil, to begin. And it means that Noach began, he set in motion a process, which culminates, of course, with what his son Chom perpetrates. But Vayochel is Lashon Haschola in the sense that a small miscue, a small misdeed, says the Sforno, often will set into motion, will trigger a chain of events that culminates in something much more significant, something much more momentous. V'zeba atzmo, skipping a few words at the end of the second line here, hora va'onlo va'yochalo on lisnos. At the end of Parshas Bolok, when the Torah describes it, va'yochalo on lisnos, that they began to engage in promiscuous behavior, and then this ultimately results even in Avodah Zarah. Sforno is telling us something very, very, very important yisod in life. Sometimes we sort of bracket our actions as though they're self-contained, as though they're compartmentalized. Okay, whatever I do now is, okay, so that's what I did at 8:05 on Tuesday night, and at 8:10 I'll do something else. And the Sforno says, that's not the way the dynamic of life operates. Vayochel Noach, what happened subsequently, began now. The shikrus, the intoxication, and then what Chom does to Noah, all of that began now with the mistaken priorities of planting the vineyard. Could be that the Ibn Ezra has this in mind as well. If you take a look, the Ibn Ezra, in the second line, the line beginning Isha Adama, midway through the line, he says, V'hadrash, Chazal say in Bereshis Rabbah, Shebiyom shenito'o shasa mimenu, which literally translates that on the day Noah planted the vineyard, that it bore fruit, it bore grapes that very same day, and on that very same day, he drank and became intoxicated. So the Ibn Ezra says, Yesh lo sod, ve'nenu kemashmo. Chazal didn't intend this to be taken literally. So what does it mean? So possibly what the Ibn Ezra has in mind is what the Sforno says, that biyom shenito shasa miyeno, that when did Noah set in motion that process? When did he start going along the course of action which resulted in the intoxication? It didn't happen out of nowhere. It didn't happen yesh me'ayin on the day that Noach began to drink. It began with the planting. Whenever we need to make a decision, whether to do something, not do something, go somewhere, not go somewhere. So we have to realize that in assessing, it's not just a question of, well, maybe it's okay to do it once and tuck in, maybe it isn't a good idea to do it repeatedly. Maybe it's something, maybe it's not a site to visit repeatedly. But how much harm can there be in looking once? Whatever the decision is that may be before us. So the Sforno teaches us that it has to, when we assess what's appropriate, what's inappropriate, we have to recognize that anything and everything we do is not self-contained, not compartmentalized. Everything sets a process in motion. Now, again, the process is not inexorable. Noach didn't lose his bechira. He could have reversed course. But the point is that he was at a crossroads. If you're at a crossroads, so then, and you make the wrong turn, yeah, you do still have the ability, you still have the bechira to correct course. But the point is that if you don't, so then you'll trace back. All my problems happened when I made that right instead of going straight. All the problems happened when I went straight instead of turning to the left, instead of turning to the right. And you talk, and again, that's what Ibn Ezra means. Shebiyom shenatar shasim yeno. That's when Noach cast the die. Noach cast the die for his shikrus and everything that happened as a result when he went and he planted the vineyard. I don't know why the Sforno doesn't make this association for us. It seems like a very natural association with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that you have underneath the Ibn Ezra. So, Ben Azai Omer, have a ratz the mitzvah kalaka v'chamura u'bareach min ha'avera. A person should pursue any mitzvah, even if it seems to be a mitzvah, as it were, of lesser importance. And a person should run away, should flee from any avera. Shemitzvah goeres mitzvah va'avera goeres avera. Meaning the Mishnah is making exactly this point, that a person should realize that what's at stake in my doing this one mitzvah, no, that has the potential to put me on course for many, many mitzvahs. But the opposite, Rachman al-Tzman, is also true. One avera can set me on a path which leads, Rachman al-Tzman, to many other averas. And a person, when he's boreach and havera, has to realize that what he, she is running away from is not just this one instance of avera. If you take a look at the Rabbeinu Yoni here, the Atta Ben Azai, beginning in the second line of the paragraph that you have in front of you, the Atta Ben Azai Hosef Tam Achiv Omar, Havei Rotsi Mitzvah Kalu Boreach Min Havera, She Mitzvah Goreis Mitzvah Mikoach HaTeva. Mitzvah Goreis Mitzvah is not some kind of supernatural reward that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bestowing. It's something that happens naturally. It's part of the natural cause and effect. Ki ba'asos ha'odam mitzvah k'tana pa'am achas. Person does one little mitzvah. One little mitzvah. I don't know, maybe a person holds the door open for someone else. A person says one bracha with kavana instead of saying that bracha by rote. Ki ba'asos ha'odam mitzvah k'tana pa'am achas. One little mitzvah. Once. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, whom is Chareb Es Hashem, or El Hashem? A person takes a step closer, thereby, Kaviyachot HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umargil Es Rucho La'avodoso. And trains himself, herself, habituates himself, herself, La'avodoso, to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, Memela, Nikla Ve'enov, it becomes easier for him. Lasos mitzvah acheres sheyesh b'torach keneged harishona. Now the person's in a different place, having come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the first mitzvah. So a person is in a different place, has a different perspective when the next mitzvah comes their way. When the next mitzvah comes that way, so then the person is going to be will undertake that mitzvah more readily than neshek for huigal tivol the melachas mitzvah, because the person has habituated himself, herself, to the mitzvah. But Rabbi Yona explains similarly. If you take a look in the paragraph beginning for ha'avera goeres ha'avera, so Rabbi Yona says gam zemen ha'teva. This too, again, we're not talking about supernatural punishment. Acha she'asa avera achas v'nisrachek me'avodas Hashem yisbarach. If a person does one avera, so a person, as it were, turns his back, her back on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, distances himself, herself on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kisavu lidei avera achas, kisavu liyado avera acheres, af ki ein hayetze mis'aver eilehu kevarishana ya'asama. Maybe the Yetzer Hara for the second Avera isn't as great, but then a person, it's become already more habitual to do Averas. So the person will succumb even to the lesser Yetzer Hara the second time. What's so remarkable about this Rabbeinu Yonah speaks about Hergel, right? Speaks about Margelus Rucho, even by doing something once. A person does something once. We think of Hergel, okay, a person becomes addicted, so it means I do it time and time and time again. I do it once, it's nothing. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, no. Hergel is developed incrementally, and even once, even one instance, already creates a measure of Hergel. Doing something once, he's not equating doing something once with doing it 10 times, but doing something once already creates a measure of hergel. There's already an element of habit, of habituation, which will affect how the person responds to the next challenge, the next encounter. And that's exactly the same yisod as the svuno of Vayochel Noach. Noach began along a certain course. What we do isn't self-contained, it's not compartmentalized. Everything has a ripple effect. Everything generates momentum, everything pushes us in a certain direction. Again, it's not irreversible, it's not inexorable, but we need to recognize the significance of every single action. How did this happen? Noah was such a tzaddik tamid. He was able to cultivate that tzidkus, that tzmimus, despite the fact that the entire world around him was evil. Such a tzaddik tamid that he merited being saved. So how does Noah end up engaged in such behavior? So there's a very important principle of interpretation that we need to be aware of whenever we try to tackle such a question. Whether it's the question at hand, whether it's trying to understand in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, the story of Yosef and the brothers, the Shiftei Kod, they're jealous, they hate. What is that all about? Yaakov Avinu is the Bechir HaAvos, who's greater, according to Chazal, than even Avraham and Yitzchak. So Yaakov Avinu plays favorites amongst his chosen. So what does all that mean? So we're supposed to try to understand the Chumash, but in so doing, we're supposed to recognize that we're understanding it on our level. That doesn't really correspond to what's happening on Yaakov Avinu's level, what was happening on the level of Yosef and then the brothers, what's happening on Noach's level. But if the Torah tells us the story, so there's something for us to learn, there's something for us to gain on our level, but we're supposed to recognize that the lessons we're learning, it's not necessarily that that's what's happening, that that what we can relate to is that that's what's happening with Yaakov and his son. Yaakov didn't need to read books on parenting. Yaakov understood full well that you don't play favorites amongst the children. So what's going on there that he makes Yosef the son of his possum? We don't know. But on our level, there's a lesson to be derived that a parent is not supposed to show favoritism to one child amongst others. So what we're going to try to interpret here in the story of Noah doesn't claim to say what actually is happening with Noah. It's not a chapter to be contributed to a biography of Noah, but it's how the story filters down to us. What we learn from this story. If you turn the page on the second side here. If you see after the lines branch out to the right, around seven lines down, Amar Yitzchak, Yitzchak shel Adam is chadish shel b'chol yom. The Yetzahara that entices a person to sin, that entices a person to be overly, unduly involved with the material, with the physical, mischadish alav b'chol yom, is rejuvenated every day. It doesn't become stale. Let's say if a store has the same sale every day, day in, day out, week in, week out. So it's maybe the first day that the item is on sale. So it's enticing, it's an attraction. But if it's the same sale, the same product being offered day after day, it's not enticing anymore. So one would have thought that the Yetzer Hara is the same products, same enticements. One would have thought that the offerings of the Yetzer Hara would become stale and that it would become less and less enticing. So say Chazal, that's not the case. Yitzur shel Adam mischad shel b'chol yom. The Yetzahara, there's a freshness to what the Yetzahara offers us every day. The Yetzahara becomes rejuvenated every day. How should we understand that? So, Kohelet tells us a major principle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Bria. Kohelet tells us that Zeh u'mazeh osa Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with symmetry. He created the world with balance. Chazal tell us, the Rambam summarizes it. It's actually the part of the Rambam which goes over to the third side, the second page. If you take a look at the top of the page, Afilu Ava Kol Yama. Rambam's talking about the possibility of doing tshuva. Even if a person's whole life, the person was sinning, Afilu Ava Kol Yama, V'osar tshuva b'yom yisasa, and it's only on the day of death, Rachman Letzlan, on the day of death, the person does tshuva, umeis b'tshuvasa, but then dies having done tshuva, kol avonosav numkala. All a person's sins are forgiven. So you see, a person can live 70 years, can live a life of sin for 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, however long it is, and he still has the capacity to do tshuva. No matter how much water there is under the bridge, no matter how much negative momentum there is, no matter how mired in chait the person is, the person has a koach of what? Of his chachos. He has a koach of renewal. A person can change A person can overcome all that. A person can reverse all that. But if a person has the koach to go against 70, 80, 90 years of chet, Rachmana Litzlan, which is why a person can never ever despair, which is why a person always has hope and always has the ability to change and improve. But that also means that a person can be a tzaddik for 70, 80 years and then conform. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us that koach to change so that we can redeem ourselves even at the last moment, so means that a person can never lock himself, herself into a safe place. Even a Noach who achieves a madrega of tzaddik tomim, that he merits being saved, even a Noach can fall, because if he wouldn't have the potential to fall, then we wouldn't have the potential to redeem ourselves and to be mischadesh through tshuva. Now there is something here which seems somewhat paradoxical, but when we think about it a little bit, it's not really so. When does Noach fall? After spending the year in the Teva. What was he doing during that year in the Teva? So at HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command, he was basically 24/7 a zookeeper. He was dealing with a Meshugana Avi, who if he was late with the Cheerios for breakfast, active, he was dealing with a Meshugana Ove, who was jealous and paranoid. So Noach spends the year in the Teva engaged in tremendous Avodas Hashem. He achieves an even higher Madrega than he was on when he entered the Teva as a Tzaddik Tomim. And then of all times he falls. So the understanding is as follows. Here, listen carefully. After we do something good, say we had a really good day, the day was very productive, we were very sensitive, and I would have been Odom L'Chavero, davened very well, used our time appropriately. So a person should have a sense of Sipuk HaNefesh. A person should have a sense of satisfaction, because that sense of satisfaction will give a person chizuk to continue. I can do this. Look, I was successful today. If I was successful today, I can be successful tomorrow as well. It's a source of chizuk, it's a source of inspiration. Just the other day, I heard someone quote that Soloveitchik commented very beautifully that in Bereshis, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates everything, Vayara Elokim Ki Tov, Vayara Elokim Ki Tov. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to look back? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that there was a question that maybe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done wasn't Tov. He has to review it to see whether it was Tov. So the Rav said that the Torah describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu in human terms so that we'll know what to emulate. And the Torah is telling us that a person should take stock of what he did, what he accomplished, and should recognize the Tov. It's important. It serves as a source of chizuk and inspiration moving forward. But all that notwithstanding, there's a very tenuous line that can become blurred between a sense of Sipuk HaNefesh, which serves as a source of chizuk and inspiration, and a sense of smugness and complacency. A person may be maybe that Sipuka Nefesh can have a tinge of a sense of superiority. Maybe it can have a sense of, when I get up to daven, so I daven well. I don't really have to exert myself to focus. I'm on a roll. I daven bekavana. Sipuka Nefesh can cross the line and turn into smugness and can create a sense of complacency. And that's why what seems paradoxical is so true, that it's precisely after a person attains a madrega in Avodas Hashem, after a person has a good day, after a person deals with a challenge and rises to the occasion, that dafka then a person has to be careful not to have, has to be extra careful not to have an afila. It's dafka after that year of incredible avoda and exertion in the teva, it's dafka then that Noach is especially vulnerable to an afila, and that's exactly what happens. Vayochel Noach isha adoma. Okay, well, let's shift to something else. The next source that you have in front of you here, the Rambam in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Avodah Zarah gives us a history of how Avodah Zarah appeared in the world. And he describes that b'mei enosh tov b'nei ha'odom tov gedolah, that in the generation of Enosh, people made a tremendous blunder. And their counsel became ignorant. And Enosh himself wasn't just that it was in his day, but he himself also blundered. Amru, they reasoned as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the stars, he created the spheres, and the spheres are responsible for the planetary motion. And he put them up in the heavens, and he gave them such a position of honor. And they are executing, implementing his will. So we should revere that. We should direct acts of worship towards that. This is all their misguided reasoning. So that's the first stage of Avodah Zarah. In the second paragraph, Rambam continues, I think that maybe this is Halacha Beis, the Rambam continues and says, Acha she'olchu hayamim, after much time elapsed with people engaged in this sort and stage of Avodah Zarah, under b'vnei adam nevi yeshekah, so some charlatans arose, false prophets, they claimed that it was not only their human reasoning that this was the right thing to do, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told them that he wants them to worship such and such a star. Subsequently, the Rambam says that other v'hischilu kozrim acherim, line 6, other fakers, other liars began to say Lamad Valoma, that they received their prophecy from the star, from the sphere, from the angel. The Kevon She'olchu Hayomim, I think that's around line 8. As time passed, Nishtaka Hashem Hanichbad Vahanov in Pikol Ayakum, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was forgotten. Velohi Kiruhu, and almost no one knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore. The world descended into crude polytheism. And then the Rambam says, Avol Tzor HaOlamim, right, we're 2 lines from the end of the paragraph, There were only very few isolated individuals who knew that there was a Hashem, who knew that there was a Borei Olam, Kegon Chanoch, Vesushala, Noach, Shem, Ve'eber. Ve'al derech zeh hoya ha'olam holech u'mezgalgal, and the world was on this downward spiral, ad shenolad amudu shel olam, until the pillar of the world was born, Ruach Avraham Avinu. So there's something absolutely remarkable about this history that the Rambam sketched for us. Look especially, again, at those last two lines that we just read. Aval tzur ha'olamim l'hoya shem odem shayim akiru v'la yodo al yechidim ba'olam kegon chanoch u'misushalach noach shem ba'eber. What's so remarkable is not something the Rambam says, it's something the Rambam doesn't say. I think we would have thought, if we were asked to sort of reconstruct what must have happened, we would have said that when the Mabul happened, so that was like pressing a reset button. After the Mabul, it has to be that not only Noach and Shem recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it has to be that Yefes and Chom and their wives recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. But then, maybe history repeated itself. But the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam says it was one continuous downward spiral. Nothing changed with the Mabul. Yefes and Mrs. Yefes, Chom and Mrs. Chom came out of the Teva the same way they went into the Teva. It's absolutely mind-boggling. There was no reset button. The Mabul didn't affect them. The world was destroyed. Noach was telling everyone to his sons and daughters-in-law were also aware of it. He was building a teva for 120 years, and he was telling everyone that Ribbono Shel Olam was going to destroy the world because the world's so evil. And then the nevuah materializes, and nothing. And ha'olam hoya holech u'mezgalgal, there was this continuous downward spiral which began bimei Enosh, and it went continuously until Avraham Avinu, and the Mabul did not have the effect of pressing a reset button. How is that possible? How is it possible to see the whole world destroyed and nothing? And no change. And Taka we see in the Chumash that the Rambam is clearly assuming, like some Mefarshim say explicitly, that Noah's children were saved not in their own merit, but in his merit. So that's why that there's no assumption that Yefes and Chom and their wives were noble people. They were saved in the merit of Noach. So they went into the Teva, those two couples went into the Teva and came out of the Teva, the same people. And that's what we see. We see from what Chom does afterwards that the same Russia he was when he went into the Teva, he was the same Russia when he came out of the Teva. How is that possible? How is it possible to see the entire world destroyed and to be unaffected? So, when I first noticed this, it's like your mind shuts down. You can't process it. It's just so overwhelming. How is it possible? But then you begin to think, maybe what the Rambam is describing here is not so foreign to us. Maybe it is something that we know from recent history as well. How much did the world change because of the Holocaust? I don't mean politically, So again, on a natural level, obviously politically, the Hakamas HaMadina is in response to the Holocaust. But religiously, spiritually, how much does the world change because of the Holocaust? How much will we change? How much will the Jewish people change? I don't know. So maybe what the Rambam is describing, it's no less mind-boggling when you think about it, but maybe it's not so alien to us. Maybe something cataclysmic can happen, something catastrophic can happen, and we remain unchanged. Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Hillel used to say, "Ein ani li mili." But what does that mean? So Rabbi Yona comments both on the Mishnah and in Shari Tshuva. Here you have what Rabbi Yona says on the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Hu ha'yomim ein ani li mili im lo olchiach atzmi she'azareis atzmi b'mitzvos mili lohochiach u'lezor zayni. If I won't rebuke myself, if I won't urge myself to act, to change, to improve, to do, mili lahochiach u'lezor zayni. So who can do it? Ki zirus ha'acherim. Yes, others, they can cajole me, they can urge me. Tovu lefi sha'a. Momentarily, it's good, but it doesn't last. What only thing that lasts, and he says it in Shari Tshuva, maybe it's even a little bit sharper than the formulation. Biwa hadava. Im ha'odom lo ye'ore nafsho, ma yo'ilu ha'musarim. We can go and we can hear a Musa Shmuz. We can go and we can hear Divei Hisarus. We can go to a kumzitz and feel at the moment very inspired. But, says Rabbi Yona, if a person doesn't take ownership and responsibility to act on himself, to be responsible for himself, the person says, "No, I'll go hear what this person's going to say. I'll expose myself to listen, to hear, to the experience." But a person doesn't take ownership of it. If a person won't arouse himself, what we hear from others is not going to benefit him. Yeah, it enters one's mind, one's heart, on the day that one hears it. But it goes in one ear. And if a person doesn't take responsibility for it, it goes out the other ear. We can witness something, we can hear something, and it shakes us. But when you shake, you stay in the same position. Other people can shake us. We can be shaken up by something we read, something we hear, a thought that someone else shares with us, but we're not going to move. No one else is going to move us. A person, ima adam lo ya'ore nafsho, so it doesn't matter what the external force is. External forces don't move us. A person only, it has to be an internal engine that gets a person to move. Im ha'adam lo ya'or nafsho, ma yo'il ha'musarim, and the musar may be the marble. The musar may be the marble. But im ha'adam lo ya'or nafsho, but if you don't go to sleep every night in the teva, thinking, what's happening? What are its implications? what's the message to me as to how I have to live my life? So then you come out of the teva, the same person you went into the teva. You can go into the teva achom and come out of the teva the same chom. Because in ma'odim lo ya'ora nafsho ma yo'ilu ha'musod. The Rambam continues, I apologize, you don't have this in front of you, I forgot to ask for that part. The Rambam continues describing how Avraham Avinu didn't have any contact with even those individuals who were still alive. Avraham Avinu's lifetime overlaps with that of Noach, Shem, and Eber. But apparently they lived in different parts of Bavel or whatever it was. Avraham Avinu wasn't exposed to them. Avraham describes how Avraham Avinu was mushka b'orkastem, how he was wallowing in orkastem, where everyone and he amongst them were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. His father was an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Avraham Avinu was raised on that ideology, on idol worship, and he himself was mushka. But libo hayu meshotek, but his mind was wandering, and he was restless. And there was a tremendous independence of spirit until ultimately Avraham Avinu figures out and recognizes the emes. I don't know that there are any times in history that are ever as challenging as what Avraham Avinu had to deal with. To live amongst people when no one knows the truth, no one knows how to live, no one recognizes the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to have to recognize the truth all on one's own, I don't know whether that challenge ever gets replicated. But there are generations in which one lives in a society which is so confused and so mixed up that there's a me'aim of that challenge. We live in such a society. The Western world today, I don't know, maybe back in Greco-Roman times, maybe the Western world was as mixed up and messed up as it is today. I'm not sure, I don't think so. I think it's probably unprecedented in terms of just how confused the society as a whole is. Immorality is now society's morality. And if a person has principles and a person subscribes to Torah morality, which is traditional morality, so then the person is bigoted and intolerant. That's the world we live in. We all need a little bit to be a me'ain of Avraham Avinu and to be able to rise above the confusion of the societal confusion that surrounds us. The only thing that's wrong, according to modern society, in terms of morality, is to say that some things are wrong. Well, that's wrong. To say that certain types of behavior, like what Shmuel said, are wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said is unacceptable, that's wrong. That's the only thing that's wrong. That's the only Avera in modern society. So it's Mamash of Anahafelchu. Mamash of Anahafelchu. We need to call upon those kochos that Avraham Avinu bequeathed to all of us to be able to rise above societal confusion. Maybe just one last observation from the parashas we've been reading in Sefer Bereishis. The last source that you have here on these two sheets. Second pasuk in the Torah, "Va'aretz ha'sosov v'avov v'choshech al p'nei sihon v'ruach elokim v'rachefes al p'nei amayim." So the pshuto shel mikra would seem to me that when the Torah is describing the state of the world at the very beginning of the Bria, right? At the very first stage of the Bria, so things were tohu v'avohu. Chazal have a tradition that they share with us that the Torah is not just describing those first cosmic moments, but the Torah is describing different kufas in history, different generations in history. So Rabbi Yehuda bar Simon in the first paragraph, Posa Kroya Bedoros, again he interprets this pasuk, the description of Tohu Vavohu, that it represents subsequent generations. Tohu Vavohu za Adam Harishon Shehoya Lelama Veloklum. Didn't realize his potential. Vavohu Zekayin Shabikesh Lahachzer Sa'olam Tohu Vavohu. Vachoshech Zador Shel Enosh, where the world descended into Avodah Zarah, al shem v'hoya v'machshach ma'asehim, al p'nei tahom zedu ha-mavul, shenama b'yom hazeh nifku kol ma'inos tahom, v'yom elukim, skipping a line and a half, yihi or zavra. And that's one pshat in Chazal on the pasuk v'otz ha-sazov v'avol. Take a look at the next paragraph. Ibshimran Lokish Pasak Kraya Begolias. This pasuk foreshadows the whole course of history. The Dalit Golias, the Dalit Malchias, who subjugate Kal Yisrael. Va'ortzai Sasor Zegolas Bovel. Va'vohu in the second line Zegolas Modai. V'choshach in the third line Zegolas Yovan. Al Pnei Sahom, the end of the third line, Zegolus Mamlechus HaRashah, V'ruach Elokim Merachefes, Zehu Ruach Shel Melech HaMashiach. There's so much to elicit from these Medrashim, but perhaps just one idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the future. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is poised, kaviyotl, to create the world, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees. He sees the tohu, vavohu, v'choshech al p'nei sahom that's going to ensue. He sees that the world is going to be so wicked that he's going to have to destroy the whole world, and only one Noach will merit being spared, and in his merit, his family as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but you know what? Afal pichein, it's all worth it. It's all worth it because Yehi Or is going to be Avraham Avinu. It's going to be Avraham Avinu who has Amuna and shares his Amuna. It's going to be an Avraham Avinu who's going to be a pillar of chesed in the world. He's going to engage in Maaseh Chesed. He's going to teach the world to engage in Maaseh Chesed. And that clearly makes all the tov, vavov, v'choshef that has to be endured worth it. Similarly, the same perspective. The same idea emerges from the next medrash. How much suffering was endured, was experienced in Golas Bavel, in Golas Moda, in Golas Yavan, and the fourth and last Golias. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but it's all worth it, because ultimately, when the Melech HaMashiach comes, so then the world knows HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do we learn from this? The value of a mitzvah. The value of a mitzvah. And Avraham Avinu, one Avraham Avinu, with his mitzvahs, with his emunah, makes all the tohu vavohu of Enosh and the Dor HaMabel worth it. It's all worth it. It's all outweighed by Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, he's coming down in Shachris. It's all worth it. It's all worth it. The Dor Shel Enosh, when a third of the world was destroyed, and the Dor HaMabel, when the whole world is destroyed, it's all worth it. Avraham Avinu is going to daven a shachris. Avraham Avinu is going to be gomel chesed. Chazal say, and again, this is on the same. Let's keep in mind the principle we had before of sort of analyzing stories of the others and the shift they caught on our own level, recognizing that that's not how they experienced them. But Chazal say, the pasuk says, "Vayishma Ruven vayitzileu miyodem." Ruven hears the brothers plotting, conspiring to kill Yosef. So vayitzileu miyodem, he saves and says, "No, Ashlichu osel avor hazeh. Throw him into this pit." And what does Ruven have in mind? Leman hatzil osu miyodem hashivol avich. And the Torah tells us what Ruven is planning is, I'll get them to put him in the pit, and then I'll distract them, I'll take him out of the pit, and I'll return him to Yaakov Avinu. Chazal say that had Ruven known that this was going to be written in the Torah, so right away he would have taken Yosef on his shoulders and run home and brought him to Yaakov Avinu. So what does that mean? Had Ruven known he was going to make the headlines, he'd be in the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Oh, it's good that. So what does it mean? Whenever a person is weighing whether to do something, whether not to do it, so maybe we don't necessarily articulate this calculation to ourselves. Maybe the deliberation isn't always conscious, but on some level, we're sort of weighing the benefit of doing it to the exertion and the time that it's going to take to do it. If I have a quarter, it falls out of my pocket, and echshehu, it rolls underneath this shtender. So I have to, is it kedai? Maybe I'm going to hurt my back if I try to move the shtender for a quarter. Maybe I'll do it, maybe I don't do it. If there's a blank check for $1 million underneath it, so echshehu, I'll deal with my back. I'm gonna move the shtender. I'm gonna get the check for $1 million. I'm not any stronger than if it was a quarter, but everything is a cost and benefit analysis. Kaviyochel again, Chazal analyzing Ruvain on our level. Had Ruvain realized just how choshuv, just how important the mitzvah he's doing was, so he wouldn't have hesitated, he wouldn't have delayed. He would have found a way to do it immediately, and he would have found a way to overcome whatever obstacles there were and to do it immediately. The more we understand the chashivus of a mitzvah, So then the more motivated we are, the more energized we are, and the more dedicated we are to carry out that mitzvah and to find a way to do it and to find a way to do it now. If we would recognize that an Avraham Avinu who's going to daven shachris, Avraham Avinu who's going to have emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Avraham Avinu who's going to do chesed, all of that makes everything else kedai. It makes the Dor Shel Enosh kedai. It makes the Dor HaMabul kedai. All of that is worth it for an Avraham Avinu because he'll daven shachris, al hamakom asher amad sham, and he'll tell Yitzchak to daven shachris, and he'll have emunah b'Hashem, and he'll share that emunah b'Hashem. And he'll do chesed. If we would recognize just how chashuv that is, it would translate again into, there would be an adrenaline rush every time we had an opportunity to do a mitzvah, every time we had a chance to say a tefillah.